He got some rolls of paper, a ladder and a brush, and with me mother's nightgown on, and it he made a rush. When father papered the parlor, you couldn't see papa pace. Dabbing at here and dabbing at there, there was paste and paste for everywhere. Mother was stuck to the ceiling and the kids were stuck to the floor. You never saw such a blooming family so stuck up before.
The island. 2 months have elapsed and the scene is a desert island in the Pacific on which our adventurers have been wrecked. The curtain rises on a sea of bamboo, which shuts out all view save the foliage of palm trees and some gaunt rocks. Occasionally, Crichton and Traherne come momentarily into sight, hacking and hewing the bamboo through which they are making a clearing between the ladies and the shore, and by, owing to their efforts, we shall have an unrestricted outlook onto a sullen sea that is at present hidden. Then we shall also be able to note a mast standing out of the water, all that is left, saving floating wreckage, of the ill-fated yacht, the Bluebell. The beginnings of a hut will also be seen, with Crichton driving its walls into the ground or astride its roof of saplings, for at present he is doing more than one thing at a time. In a red shirt, with the ends of his sailor's breeches thrust into wading boots, he looks a man for the moment. We suddenly remember someone saying, perhaps it was ourselves, that a cataclysm would be needed to get him out of his servant's clothes, and apparently it has been forthcoming. It is no longer beneath our dignity to cast an inquiring eye on his appearance. His features are not distinguished, but he has a strong jaw and green eyes in which a yellow light burns that we have not seen before. His dark hair, hitherto so decorously sleek, has been ruffled this way and that by wind and weather, as if they were part of the cataclysm. His muscles must be soft and flabby still, but though they shriek aloud to him to desist, he rains lusty blows with his axe, like one who has come upon the open for the first time in his life and likes it. He is as yet far from being an expert woodsman. Mark the blood on his hands at places where he has hit them instead of the tree. But note also that he does not waste time in bandaging them. He rubs them in the earth and goes on. His face is still of the discreet pallor that befits a butler, and he carries the smaller logs as if they were a salver. Not in a day or a month will he shake off the badge of servitude, but without knowing it, he has begun. But for the hatchets at work and an occasional something horrible falling from a tree onto the ladies' laps, they hear nothing save the mournful surf breaking on a coral shore. They sit or recline huddled together against a rock, and they are farther from home in every sense of the word than ever before. 36 hours ago, they were given 3 minutes in which to dress without a maid and reach the boats, and they have not made the best of that valuable time. None of them has boots, and had they known this prickly island, they would have thought first of boots. They have a sufficiency of garments, but some of them were gifts dropped into the boat. Lady Mary's coat and hat, for instance, and Catherine's blue jersey and red cap. Agatha is in Ernest's dressing gown and clutches it to her person with both hands, as if afraid that it may be claimed by its rightful owner. There are 2 pairs of bath slippers between the 3 ladies, and their hair cries aloud in vain for hairpins. By their side, on an inverted bucket, sits Ernest, clothed neatly in the garments of day and night, but alas, barefooted. He is the only cheerful member of this company of 4. But his brightness is due less to a manly desire to succor the helpless than to his having been lately in the throes of composition and to his modest satisfaction with the result. He reads to the ladies, and they listen, each with one scared eye to the things that fall from trees. Ernest has written on the flyleaf of the only book saved from the wreck.
This is what I have written. Wrecked, wrecked, wrecked on an island in the tropics. The following, the Honorable Ernest Woolley, the Reverend John Traherne, the Ladies Mary, Catherine, and Agatha Lazenby, with 2 servants. We are the sole survivors of Lord Loam's steam yacht Bluebell, which encountered a fearful gale in these seas and soon became a total wreck. The crew behaved gallantly, putting us all into the first boat. What became of them, I cannot tell. But we, after dreadful sufferings and insufficiently clad in whatever garments we could lay hold of in the dark...
Please don't describe our garments.
...succeeded in reaching this island with the loss of only one of our party, namely Lord Loam, who flung away his life in a gallant attempt to save a servant who had fallen overboard.
The ladies have wept long and sore for their father. But there is something in this last utterance that makes them look up.
But Ernest, it was Crichton who jumped overboard trying to save Father.
Well, you know, it was rather silly of Uncle to fling away his life by trying to get into the boat first. And as this document may be printed in the English papers, it struck me, an English peer, you know.
Ernest, that is very thoughtful of you.
By night, the cries of wildcats and the hissing of snakes terrify us extremely.
This does not satisfy him so well, and he makes the correction.
Terrify the ladies extremely. Against these, we have no weapons except one cutlass and a hatchet. A bucket washed ashore is at present our only comfortable seat.
And Ernest is sitting on it.
Shh! Oh, do be quiet. To add to our horrors, night falls suddenly in these parts, and it is then that savage animals begin to prowl and roar.
Have you said that vampire bats suck the blood from our toes as we sleep?
No, that's all. I end up. Rescue us or we perish. Rich reward. Signed, Ernest Woolley, in command of our little party. This is written on a leaf taken out of a book of poems that Crichton found in his pocket. Fancy Crichton being a reader of poetry. Now, I shall put it into the bottle and fling it into the sea.
He pushes the precious document into a soda water bottle and rams the cork home. At the same moment, and without effort, he gives birth to one of his most characteristic epigrams.
The tide is going out. We mustn't miss the post.
They are so unhappy that they fail to grasp it, and a little petulantly he calls for Crichton, ever his standby in the hour of epigram. Crichton breaks through the undergrowth quickly, thinking the ladies are in danger.
Anything wrong, sir?
The tide, Crichton, is a postman who calls at our island twice a day for letters.
Thank you, sir.
Crichton returns to his labors, however, without giving the smile which is the epigrammatist's right. And Ernest is a little disappointed in him.
Poor Crichton. I sometimes think he is losing his sense of humor. Come along, Agatha.
Ernest helps his favorite up the rocks, and he and Agatha disappear gingerly from view.
How horribly still it is.
It is best when it is still.
Mary, I have heard that they are always very still just before they jump.
Don't.
A distinct crash is heard, and they are startled.
It is only Crichton knocking down trees.
Mary, let us go and stand beside him.
Let a servant see that I am afraid.
Don't then. But remember this, dear. Things here often drop on one from above.
Catherine moves away, nearer to the friendly sound of the axe, and Lady Mary is left alone. She is the most courageous of them, as well as the haughtiest. But when something she had thought to be a stick glides towards her, she forgets her dignity and screams.
Crichton! Crichton!
It must have been Treherne who was tree-felling, for Crichton comes to Mary from the hut, drawing his cutlass.
Did you call, my lady?
I? Why should I?
I made a mistake, your ladyship. If you are afraid of being alone, my lady...
Afraid? Certainly not. You may go.
But she does not complain when he remains within eyesight, cutting the bamboo. It is heavy work, and she watches him silently.
I wish, Crichton, you could work without getting so hot.
I wish I could, my lady.
He continues his labors. Lady Mary takes off her oilskins.
Makes me hot to look at you.
It almost makes me cool to look at your ladyship.
Anything I can do for you in that way, Crichton, I shall do with pleasure.
Thank you, my lady.
By this time, most of the bamboo has been cut, and the shore and sea are visible, except where they are hidden by the half-completed hut. The mast rising solitary from the water adds to the desolation of the scene, and at last tears run down Lady Mary's face.
Don't give way, my lady. Things might be worse.
My poor father.
If I could have given my life for his...
Did all a man could do. Indeed, I thank you, Crichton. You are a man.
Thank you, my lady.
But it is all so awful. Crichton, is there any hope of a ship coming?
Of course there is, my lady.
Don't treat me as a child. I've got to know the worst and to face it. Crichton, the truth.
We were driven out of our course, my lady. I fear far from the track of commerce.
Thank you. I understand.
For a moment, however, she breaks down. Then she clenches her hands and stands erect, Crichton watching her, forgetting perhaps for the moment that they are not just a man and a woman. Mary falls into the same error before extricating herself.
You're a good Braven, my lady.
I shall try to be. Crichton, how dare you?
I beg your ladyship's pardon, but you are.
She smiles, as if it were a comfort to be told this, even by Crichton.
And until a ship comes, we are three men who are going to do our best for you ladies.
Mr. Ernest does no work.
But he will, my lady.
Doubt it.
No work, no dinner will make a great change in Mr. Ernest.
No work, no dinner. When did you invent that rule, Crichton?
Crichton's arms are loaded with bamboo.
I didn't invent it, my lady. I seem to see it growing all over the island.
Crichton, your manner strikes me as curious.
I hope not, your ladyship.
You are not implying anything so unnatural, I presume, as that if I and my sisters don't work, there will be no dinner for us.
If it is unnatural, my lady, that is the end of it.
If. Now I understand. The perfect servant at home holds that we are all equal now. I see.
My lady, can you think me so inconsistent?
That is it.
My lady, I disbelieved in equality at home because it was against nature. For that same reason, I as utterly disbelieve it on an island.
I apologize.
There must always, my lady, be one to command and others to obey.
One to command, others to obey. Yes.
What do you think of poor old father? He